Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the plot of thunder and rock and roll. And get ready to laugh or groan at the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan calling. Hope everybody's doing good there. Listen, it was raining really, really hard, really hard. The guy hears his door pounding downstairs. Pound, 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 knock, knock, knock. Guy gets up out of bed, goes downstairs, answers the door, and it's some guy, suspect looking, "I need a push." Answering the door of the guy's house, he slams the door. He's like, "Fuck this." Goes back upstairs, crawls in bed next to his wife. His wife, you know, waking up. It's like 3 a.m. here. What's going on? Well, this guy downstairs pounded on the door in the middle of the night, wants a push. And I was like, "No." And she's like, kind of so disappointed. Like, "You got to do the Christian thing and go help out your fellow man here, you know?" And okay, you're right. You know what? He gets a coat on. He goes back downstairs and opens the door. The guy's not there. And "Hey, where'd you go?" He yells out the door, kind of comes out on the porch. "I'm back here at the swings." Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Wow. Duff went a long way for that one. But thank you, Duff. He sends every Friday a joke without fail. No matter where in the world he is, Duff and Guns N' Roses are actually in Wellington, New Zealand right now, playing Auckland tomorrow night on Saturday, then headed home for the holidays after a very long tour. Of course, I saw Duff in Melbourne, Australia, just a week or so ago, and he's just a great guy. So thanks to Duff, and thanks to all of you. Fozzie is home, like I said, after our amazing Australian tour. We had some great sold-out shows with our buddies in Buck Cherry. We're getting ready to hit the road again in the States starting March 23rd in Bloomington, Illinois. All dates and ticket information at FozzyRock.com. You can also see Fozzy on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea, the Four Leaf Clover. We set sail February 2nd. The lineup on this ship is stacked. You got to see the AEW roster that's on here. It is incredible. The Guns, the Swerve Strickland, Jade Cargill, Eddie Kingston, Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus, The Acclaimed. I mean, come on. The Jericho Appreciation Society, Top Flight, Danhausen. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. And we're also going to have the inaugural crowning of the Jericho Cruise Oceanic Champion. We got comedy, music, live podcast. Dave Schrader's Paranormal 60 is going to be there. And we're going to our own private island for the first time ever from Miami to Great Stirrup Cay. Book your cabin now at chrisjericho.com. There's 0% financing available. Go see all of the deals that you can get. And it's perfect. Present for Christmas, don't you think? Today on the show, I'm doing it solo on Talk is Jericho. It's been such an incredible year for me in wrestling. A lot of people are saying it's been a career year of mine. I thought I'd talk about some of my favorite matches, actually all the matches that I've had. When you think about it, the year actually started with my pulmonary embolism and thinking that my wrestling career might be done, and then ended up with having this barn burner five-star match with Ishii. So to start from the beginning, to get healthy, drop that weight, get back in the ring, it's crazy to think what this year ended up being. 26 matches at the time I recorded this, probably the most four-star, four-and-three-quarter, five-star matches I've had in a single year in a long time, if ever, and the most different styles of matches I've had in a single year as well. I'm going to break down the biggest ones and my favorites. We'll be talking about the creation of the Wizard, the of course, the creation of the Jericho Appreciation Society, working with Eddie Kingston for a lengthy time, working with the Black Bull Combat Club, talking about blood and guts, barbed wire everywhere, Anarchy in the Arena, Quake by the Lake against Moxley. So many great matches with Bandido, of course, and with Ishii, like I mentioned. I had a great one with Dalton Castle, Brian Danielson. So many awesome matches this year. I'm going to go through all of those with you in what could be considered a career year for me in 2022 at 51 years old. So, yeah, I'm still rolling. I'm still rolling. Keep it rolling. Here we go. Jericho's career year in 2022 right here, right now on Talk Is Jericho. All right, welcome to Talk Is Jericho. It is the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll. I'm coming to you from a high-rise hotel here in Melbourne, Australia. Day off on the Fozzie and Ozzy 2022 tour. And I wanted to do a podcast, kind of a year in review of my AEW matches in said 2022. Because a lot of people are thinking and saying that this is kind of a career year for me. A little bit of a career resurgence, which at 51 and 52 years old is kind of cool to hear. Obviously, a hater is going to hate, and there's nothing I could ever do to change that. But for me, I think this really is one of the best years of my career, which is pretty crazy when you consider that I started in 1990. I think I had a great year in 1995. I think I had a great year in 1998, 2008. 2016, those are big years for me. And here we are now in 2022. And I don't think anybody really expected this to be such a huge year for me. The last match I had on Dynamite a week ago was against Tomohiro Ishii, which was, in my opinion, one of my favorite matches I've ever had. And some people, including the illustrious Dave Meltzer, said it is the best match I've had of the year. Now, if you go by star ratings, what does a star rating really mean? You know, that's just one guy's opinion, and I have my opinion. And it is cool, though, when you have an expert like Dave Meltzer, and obviously you take the good and the bad with Dave. He's been on Talk Is Jericho many times, a great guest. But when you get the experts kind of saying, listen, this is a career year. There's been a lot of great matches in a lot of different styles. Now, obviously, if I didn't feel the same, I wouldn't be doing this podcast today. Now, if I didn't feel that way, I wouldn't do the podcast either. I've always been the type of guy that knows if it's a good match or a bad match as soon as it's finished by the way that I feel. I don't have to go on Twitter or go on to the dirt sheets and read. Now, do I look at them? Of course I do. You're crazy in 2022 to not do that, but you got to take it with a grain of salt. Because like I always say, the people that say you're the greatest thing ever, you can't take that too seriously. Because there's just many people are saying you're the worst thing ever, retire, die. So you kind of got to take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and you have the facts of life. And I ain't talking about Lisa Welchel. Wow, that's obscure. So obviously this year started when I was recovering from the pulmonary embolism, which I had December 8th in the UK. That's been documented many times. And then once I got back to the States after being stuck in the UK for almost a week, I had to start getting everything together. So that's when I started getting all the tests. And you guys know that story, which led to me having a clean bill of health right now and losing 30 pounds. But all of that was tied into the pulmonary embolism. And I did have to lose some weight. And I also wasn't allowed to wrestle for a while. And this was by verdict of the blood clot doctor. I can't remember what you call that, whatever the doctor's name was, the pulmonologist, I guess it would be. So the beginning of the year, I wasn't allowed to wrestle. And it's funny because if you guys remember the Eddie Kingston story, we were talking about the initiation of the Jericho Appreciation Society, was that I was supposed to have a match with Eddie. And then we were maybe thinking about maybe being a tag team or whatever it may be. And I'm not going to tell that story again. But in January of 2022, I was on Dynamite. I returned, but I wasn't allowed to wrestle. I was still kind of healing. And I remember asking my doctor, Dr. Shaw, in Tampa, you know, what's the time frame on this? Is mid-February going to work? And asking Dr. Sampson with AEW. And basically all of the signs were looking good, that the conditioning was getting better, the blood clots are getting smaller, and more importantly, my dosages of Eliquis, which was the blood thinner that I was taking, were getting smaller as well. And I was doing a lot of research at the time about NBA players and NFL players that play on blood thinners, and realizing that you can still professionally play, you just have to be careful. Because it's not the fact you might get cut open and bleed because your blood is so thin. It's the fact that your blood is so thin inside your body as well. So you could have, you know, some brain issues or have internal bleeding or hemorrhaging or that sort of a thing. So in all of January, the only match that I had, basically the first match of the year, and when I say match of the year, I mean the first match of 2022, was on Dynamite, January 26th in Cleveland, Ohio. And that was with Santana and Ortiz versus 2.0 and Garcia. And this is the one where Santana and Ortiz were angry at me because of what Eddie Kingston said, that maybe I was the reason why they weren't the tag team champions. And they refused to tag me in. Which was funny because that was something I was going to do with Eddie Kingston, which stemmed from an issue, a real life issue I had with CM Punk probably about 10 years ago when he got mad at me and didn't want to tag me in a match. I talked about that in the Complete List of Jericho. And I always kept it in the back of my head. Well, what if your partner just refused to tag you in? So we did that with Santana Ortiz to advance the story. And meanwhile, I didn't even tag in. So it was a match. But because I wasn't allowed to tag in, I wasn't allowed to do anything physical. I think I just did something for the finish to hit Daddy Magic, who was just in Matt Lee back then. It's so crazy to think about Matt Lee and Jeff Parker. Oh my gosh. What jobber names, right? In comparison to Daddy Magic, Matt Menard, and Cool Hand Ange, Angela Parker. So anyways, that was kind of the start of it. I did not do anything. I just was talking about the story. And then we go to Dynamite on February 16th in Nashville with Hager versus Santana Ortiz. And that was my official first match back. And I remember that's when I kind of unveiled the new body, because I wasn't taking like thirst trap pictures and showing my weight loss. And it went fast because I started doing the weight loss at the beginning of January. And by the mid-February, I was already down, I think, 15 pounds or even 20 at that point. You could really tell. And I just remember I was so excited to be back. And I remember the match was good, but I was just more happy to know that I could wrestle again. Because think about, that was 2 months after the embolism. And when it happened, I didn't know if I'd ever be able to wrestle again. So it was great to be back in the ring, which of course was leading up to March 6th in Orlando at Revolution versus Eddie Kingston. And this was one of the first kind of matches of the year for me. I think Dave Meltzer gave it 4 3/4 stars, which to him, he says it's the same as 5. To me, it's as 5 as a 5-star match you can get. Once again, never wrestled with Eddie ever. And we just had amazing, amazing chemistry. And that's when I was like, I just want to start this match off with Eddie dumping me on my head with like a really vicious, you know, Saito suplex. And that's what happened. And I remember I was really worried about that. Like, you know, obviously knowing you're going to get dumped on your head, not the coolest of thoughts and ideas, but it really grabbed the crowd's attention because we started the show that day. And I remember we just had a tremendous match. Very strong style. And he beat me with the stretch plum, which was a surprise because I don't think he'd use that on a finish, at least at a major level. And once again, the idea was going to be at that point originally that Eddie and I would shake hands. You won the big one and then would have mutual respect and maybe team with Moxley as well. But of course, the next week after that was when we were in Fort Myers and did the whole Jericho Appreciation Society turn. But basically that first match with Eddie Kingston, I mean, we had the kind of the warm-up match with Jake versus Santana Ortiz, but the Eddie was the one where I was like, I'm back. And I felt like a whole new guy because I had lost some weight, but more importantly, I had real, no pun intended, appreciation for wrestling. Didn't want to take it for granted, which I think I was. And being 30 pounds lighter, once again, it was like, imagine wrestling a match with a 30 pound weight belt on, and I got to take that off in this match with Eddie Kingston. So it really was kind of the dawning of this new era. And did I think, oh, you're going to have a career year? No, but it sure was a great start and a great match. And I think at the time, a lot of people saying it was my best AEW match ever. And at that point, it might have been. So it was a real cool way to kind of come storming into 2022 with this new attitude and this new image and this new storyline, which kind of reinvigorated everything. Then we go to Dynamite on March 23rd in Austin, Texas, with Danny Garcia versus Silver and Reynolds. I remember it was the main event of Dynamite, I believe. First time I ever tagged with Danny. And I think the idea was we were kind of getting ready for just building this story with the five of us versus the three of them. The Blackpool Combat Club had just started with the idea of we'll do kind of a amalgamation, and that'll be the 5-on-5 for Blood and Guts. We'd already started thinking about that back in March. And working with Silver and Reynolds was fun. I remember Johnny Hungy, we had him do a really great one. He has those awesome comebacks like Claudio Castagnoli does, where he hits this guy and uppercuts that guy and dives on this guy and jumps on that guy. And it was kind of a really cool match for them, kind of a great showcase moment for those two guys, and especially for Johnny Hungy. Then we go into April 13th with Danny Garcia and Jake Hager versus Kingston, Ortiz, and Santana in New Orleans. And I remember that one was once again just kind of a brawl to kind of set the tone, which led to the fireball angle, which of course started the whole wizard thing. And that was an idea that Eddie Kingston had, because he had seen it, I believe, in Puerto Rico or something. He wanted to be hit with a fireball. And I was like, all right, well, let's see if we can figure that out. And we did. And that started a whole new gimmick. And once again, these things just happen because you are, like I always say, letting the story lead you and not manipulating the story itself. So we had a lot of really great ideas and thoughts that came from that backstage beating that kind of led us to where we went for the next part of the story. So then we had a single match with Santana in Baltimore, because I wanted to work with Santana and Ortiz because I had so much history with them. Another really great match that I enjoyed. And it's funny because all of these matches so far, if you're going by the Meltzer star ratings, like, you know, Eddie Kingston, like I said, 4.75. The silver one was 3.5 stars. So that was a low one for me. The Jericho, Danny Garcia, Jake Hager, Eddie Kingston, Ortiz, Santana, 4 stars. Santana one didn't get rated, but to me, that was probably another 4-star one as well. Had a great match with Santana, very talented. And it was fun for me to work with Santana and Ortiz as singles. Because once again, there was such a story with us and so much going on between us at the time. And then there we go, man. That led us to Double or Nothing, which was the Anarchy in the Arena in Las Vegas. And what a crazy spectacle that was, which rated a 5-star rating from Dave Meltzer. Wow, my second ever 5-star, according to him. Kenny Omega at the Tokyo Dome, the other one. But he's like, what about, you know, Eddie Kingston? Or what about Ishii? Or what about Bandido? Or Moxley, Quake by the Lake? We'll get to those. Or how about versus Shawn Michaels ladder match, which won the match of the year? Or Jericho and Benoit versus Triple H and Austin? Once again, you can't live or die by the star ratings, but it is fun to debate. But Anarchy in the Arena, such a great spectacle with the Jericho Appreciation Society. Back when there was only 5 of us, Angelo Parker, Danny Garcia, Jake Hager, and Matt Menard. And that was against Danielson, Eddie Kingston, Moxley, Ortiz, and Santana. And, you know, we've told that story too about how we got there. And it reminded me of the first Elimination Chamber. You can't go back and watch any other Elimination Chambers because there hasn't been one. You know, the first Money in the Bank, there hadn't been one. The first Mimosa Mayhem that we had. The first Stadium Stampede. And, of course, Anarchy in the Arena was the evolution of the Stadium Stampede. We actually had a full crowd back in Las Vegas. And what a show we gave them. That was, talk about anarchy. It was absolutely insane. And that's when Jake and I beat Brian Danielson, who then was hurt after that. The story continues, though, on Dynamite in June. June 15th, that was a hair versus Ortiz, which had one of my all-time favorite false finishes, where Eddie Kingston came in and hit me with a hurricane, and Ortiz came over and covered me. And I'll tell you what, those people in St. Louis were convinced I was going to lose my hair, convinced I was going to lose it all. And I actually even had, if you remember, Ortiz cut some of my hair in Los Angeles, which gave me kind of a weird hairstyle for a while. But that's what I'm willing to do to get the angle over. I actually cut some of my hair off And I'm smiling as I say this because it was such a fun angle and such a fun match. But once again, working with Ortiz, Santana and Ortiz are such a great tag team. And will they team again? I don't know. But as singles, they're both just really great performers. Very creative, very hard-hitting, charismatic. And, you know, I enjoyed the Santana match as much as I enjoyed the Ortiz match. They were both such a lot of fun and just a great time to, you know, work with these guys that we had been in so many matches together in tags and stadium stampedes, but to do the one-on-one with them was amazing. I thought the hair versus hair match was a perfect example of just an excellent, excellent match with, like I said, one of the greatest false finishes possibly in AEW history. And we'll be back to talk some more of my favorite matches after this.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter your search based on the qualities that are most important to you. Then you can book a free 15-minute consultation call with any therapist you're interested in seeing, so you can get a feel for whether they're the right fit before you commit to a full-length session. Alma also makes it easy for mental health care providers to navigate insurance. That's why 95% of therapists in their directory accept insurance for sessions, so you can find care that's affordable without stressing about the paperwork. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit HelloAlma.com/therapy60 to schedule a free consultation today. That's HelloAlma.com/therapy60.
All right, back with the year in review, 2022, Chris Jericho, my matches that I had in this career year of mine. Continuing on to June 22nd, now we got the build to the Forbidden Door pay-per-view. And this was a match with Lance Archer versus Moxley and Tanahashi. And that was, I remember this one was kind of funny because it was the one that ended, something went wrong where guys were kind of jumping the gun on some of the submissions that we had and that sort of thing. And we ended up finishing up, I think, 3 minutes early. And that's where Tanahashi and Mox had to stare at each other for an unsurmountable amount of time. And that's the reason why it's live TV. And it's hard to orchestrate a tag match when I was like, you know, don't come in. You're coming too early. And it's like, you know, and Tana is in there and he just kind of like the timing just wasn't there. So that's why those guys were staring at each other. That was just more of a kind of a just action-packed tag match similar to the one that I had with the Silver and Reynolds, kind of around the same rating there. But then we go to Forbidden Door, which was Sammy Guevara, Minoru Suzuki versus Eddie Kingston, Yuta Wheeler, and Shota Umino. And that was in Chicago on June 26th. And what a match that was. Another 4 3/4 star match, according to Dave Meltzer. And the thing I loved about that one is we had the story put together and, you know, we just kind of sat down. A lot of times I'll do some research before a match to kind of see what I'm thinking about. This one, you can't really do research because, you know, Suzuki's in it, Umino's in it. And we just sat in a room and came up with this idea. And man, it ended up being probably the best match of the night. And that's a night when you had Mox versus Tanahashi and Claudio versus Zack Sabre Jr. So it just was a really, really cool. You didn't expect it to be as good as it was. And once again, we started off the show in Chicago. And anytime you can start off the show, it always adds an extra bit of crowd enthusiasm to it. But it was awesome. Did the thing with Umino because at the Tokyo Dome against Kenny, I put him in the Walls of Jericho in front of his own father. Of course, his Red Shoes. If you know the history of Red Shoes and I, we go back to 1994 together with WAR. So there's a lot of history there. And then, of course, afterwards, throw the fireball in his face and, you know, maybe a future Tokyo Dome match for sure, possibly. But it was a very, very cool night and a cool match. And once again, sometimes you put a lot of pressure on yourself to have a great match. Other times you just show up and go with the flow and whatever happens, happens. And that's what happened that night. But in the same week, another 4 3/4 star match. The Blood and Guts, that was in Detroit on June 29th. And of course that was, and I forgot to mention too, the Ortiz match is when Sammy Guevara joined the Jericho Appreciation Society and Ty Mello. So now there's six of us. And like I said, we're kind of like the Rolling Stones. We got a couple of chicks in there. We got six guys now. So the Blood and Guts was Claudio, Eddie Kingston, Moxley, Ortiz, Santana, and Wheeler Yuta against Ange. Once again, against the Jericho Appreciation Society, you know the six guys in there. And that was the second match Claudio had ever had, and he was taking Brian Danielson's place because Brian was hurt. And what another complete spectacle, obviously, with the famous Claudio giving me the giant swing on top of the cage, which he wasn't sure if he could do because the middle of the cage had a lot of different sections where the place where he could do it was the side of the cage near the edge. I said, we'll just do it there. And like I mentioned, if it was anybody else, I would have been terrified and probably wouldn't have even went for it. But I knew I could trust Claudio literally with my life. And you know, watching it back, it's like he had me in such control. But up there doing it and just seeing like these rows of people down to the ground, you know, 30 feet below, I was like, stop, stop. I can't take it anymore. I think we stopped after seven or eight spins and it felt like 50. But just another really cool match, just batshit crazy and wild. And that was the one where Claudio got the tap out on Daddy Magic and kind of thwarted Eddie Kingston on that one, which led to barbed wire everywhere, which was the blow off of Eddie Kingston and I, which I think the story had gone 8 months or something like that at that point in time. And this was a really good match, but we got cut short at the end, which was kind of a drag. Super violent, lots of gimmicks and barbed wire everywhere. We once again created our own match like Stadium Stampede or Anarchy in the Arena, but we were getting rushed at the end. Once again, it's live TV and some other people might have gone long in their segments, whatever it was. And I think we only had 13, 14 minutes to go through all this thing. And then for me, because Punk was the champ and then he got hurt and then Tony wanted Mox and I to work for the title, so I couldn't lose that match because I'm challenging for the championship. Had I not been challenging for the championship, Eddie probably would have won, but he still got the moral victory when he tossed me into the barbed wire at the end. Even though it was rushed, we still had to kind of get it done. You got to get that stuff, you know, when you got live TV, you got to make it happen. And then August 3rd on Dynamite versus Wheeler Yuta. And this, of course, is to set up for Quake by the Lake against Moxley. And had a great match with Wheeler as well. That was a lot of fun. Another four-star match. It's pretty rare for me not to get four-star matches, according to Dave Meltzer this year, which I guess is another reason why it's a career year for in his mind and in mine. A couple things about that match is I was taping The Masked Singer at that point in time. So I had gone from L.A. to Columbus to do this match and then flew back to L.A. right afterwards to continue. And the other thing was I lost my big toenail in that match against Wheeler. And I don't really know exactly why. I don't remember what happened. And that's another funny thing about pro wrestling is that you have all these crazy matches and do all these things. And then your toenail falls off and you don't even remember how it happened. It didn't stub my toe. Maybe it was off a moonsault or something. But yeah, so the toenail fell off and my toe was hard to walk. And I had to be inside that giant bride costume if you saw me on The Masked Singer, walking around with which I thought was a broken toe. So that added to the ridiculousness of that costume as well. And then, of course, Quake by the Lake, Dynamite, Minneapolis, Minnesota, August 10th. And what a war I had with Moxley. Another, to me, great match. It was 4 3/4 stars for the interim championship, AEW World Championship, which, of course, led to the return of CM Punk. And because he had been hurt, and then when the summer was over and he came back, the people just went nuts for it. And I had the Jericho Appreciation Society all take bumps for him. And then he came in with me, and I said, you can see, I charge at him with the belt. He hits me again. You see me pointing to my throat to clothesline me over the top rope to the floor. And we didn't quite have enough momentum. Nobody's fault. I called it on the fly. We didn't have the amount of momentum. So when I got stuck and he gave me a little bit of an extra shove to go over, and that's when I bruised my larynx. Total accident, no issue whatsoever. It just was the wrong place at the right time. And my throat was just caught in the middle. And dude, I could not swallow. It was terrible. I couldn't even drink water that night. And the crazy thing was, I had just been eliminated from the Masked Singer under controversial circumstances. I think one of the original ideas was I was going to be on for another couple weeks. I wouldn't have been able to because I got hit in the throat and I couldn't sing. I did go back for one last performance, but that was a couple weeks afterwards and I was singing in a lower range, but the larynx was bruised at the end of that match at Quake by the Lake. But, and on top of that, I got my forehead cut open when I took a bump into the exposed post, which was the finish, and I really hit the exposed post. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. You know, sometimes when you go to hit these posts, you're not supposed to really hit it, but I did. So I ended up with, gosh, I was a mess. 12 stitches and a bruised larynx, and I had no toenail and barbed wire everywhere. I had cut my leg, and I the barbed wire everywhere. That's when I gave Eddie a code breaker where he was holding the chair, and the chair came down right on my nose. So I was a mess over the course of those, 2 weeks or 3 weeks. My wife was furious. She's like, you got to stop this. Yeah, from July 20th. To August 10th, I had a broken nose, I had stitches in my leg, I had stitches in my forehead, I had bruised larynx, and no toenail. So there you go. Wrestling is fake, ladies and gentlemen. Well, not that 3 weeks, but I love that match with Mox. Once again, another match that could easily have been five stars, if you want to call it that. Five stars to me, but it was 4 3/4 for Big Dave. Then we go to All Out. Of course, we all know what happened at All Out, September 4th in Chicago. I worked with Brian Danielson. We had never really had a single match of merit before. We had a couple shorter matches, but never anything, you know, that could be deemed classic. And this one wasn't classic. It was good, but I think we tried just a little bit too hard. The one we had the following week was a barn burner of all barn burners to me. But this one, we just tried a little bit too hard, maybe, and it was good. Don't get me wrong. It was good, but I find sometimes that happens. Sometimes you work with someone for the first time, like Eddie Kingston, and you have just this amazing, incredible chemistry, and sometimes you get pitted with a guy that you should have amazing chemistry with, and it takes one or two matches to get into the groove. With Brian, it took one match. The same thing happened with Okada and I back in 2019, I think. The match was probably the worst rated 4-star match of all time. People bagged on that match and it was still a good match, but sometimes the expectations don't live up to what you actually see. It's like when I first saw Tim Burton's Batman, the expectations were built up so high in my mind that nothing could ever live up to it. So the good news is, I mean, like I said, the Chicago match was a good one, but the next one that we had in Albany, New York, that one was the barn burner. That was on September 14th. And of course, we had to do this because after All Out with the whole Punk situation, then the title gets stripped. So they have to find a new champion. So it was a 4-man tournament, I believe, which was Sammy versus Mox and Jericho versus Danielson, which led to Danielson versus Mox, which led to Mox becoming the true world champion. But the one that we had in Albany was incredible. Now, that one was, you know, 4.5 stars, according to Dave. It could have just easily been 5. And it was funny because I came back as Lionheart for the All Out match. And anytime I lose a match, people say it's amazing. Anytime I win a match, it's Jericho burying the young guys. So I think the first Danielson match that I won got bagged on a bit. The second one when I lost was like, oh, that's the great match. That's the one. So, and it was an excellent match. And we were fighting for our lives at that time. There was so much bad publicity on the company and kind of a black cloud, a haze hanging over it. And dude, we were fighting back. You know, we kind of took charge, Mox and Brian and I, and kind of, you know, let everyone know that the sky wasn't falling, that things happen, and we just got to keep the show rolling. And I think those following nights that we had in Buffalo and Albany really kind of reset the company in the best possible way. And having that match with Brian Danielson was one of them. So, and I remember after working with Brian the first time, I was like, where have you been all my life? Like, how crazy has it been that we've been, you know, in working, you know, together in this business, but never actually having matches like this. And this also started this string of about 8 weeks that I was on TV every week wrestling matches, which is not usually the case. I mean, this year, I think I wrestled double the matches I've had in the last 5 years. If you look at, you know, September 4th, September 14th, and then 21st, 28th, 5th, 12th, 18th, 26th, 2nd. So there's a run of just match after match after match. And that's when I think I really started cementing this, you know, great year of 2022. And some people are saying, oh, well, Jericho's a wrestler of the year candidate. Well, I am a three-time wrestler of the year in the Wrestling Observer newsletter, 2008, 2009, and 2019. So listen, it wouldn't surprise me as I could be a candidate. I mean, I am a candidate. I think with this kind of late career resurgence and all these different styles of matches I was having and am having that turned out really good. We go to Dynamite on September 21st. That was in New York City at the Arthur Ashe Stadium there. And that was versus Claudio, where I became the ROH champion in New York City. And once again, I worked with Claudio a bunch of times in WWE, but it had been a while. And I think we just had a great match, great chemistry, and a big surprise that that I was able to win that match at Grand Slam. I don't think people really expected it. And my goal was, as soon as I won, is that, I need to make this Ring of Honor title mean something. There's a lot of titles on our show, and a lot of them are just there. And as soon as Tony said he wanted me to be the champ, I was like, that's great, but I'm going to make this title the second most important title in the company besides the AEW World Championship. And I think in a lot of ways I've done that. And working with Claudio, where I kept trying to cheat and finally it worked, I think a lot of people didn't expect that. And they certainly didn't expect the Ring of Jericho era to begin, or they didn't expect the Ocho, which was Tony Khan's name. So yeah, I went from, I think, the beginning of the year, from Le Champion to the Demo God to, I think it was, you know, attendance is mandatory was one of the catchphrases I was trying to get over, GFY, which of course is go fuck yourself. And then Mox actually said that on live TV. So that one didn't work. And there's a couple other kind of catchphrases I was trying, and Tony came up with the Ocho, and that one stuck. But the thing was, I just had the Wizard that was just getting over, and I kind of had to switch back over to the Ocho. So maybe I got to switch back over to the Wizard at some point here as well. But yeah, having that match with Claudio for Grand Slam was awesome. And it really started a whole new era for Chris Jericho. And once again, started this string of really great matches that I was having week after week after week. And we'll get to the first title defense I had as the Ring of Honor champion in the Ring of Jericho era after this. All right, we continue the career year of Chris Jericho 2022. And I had the idea of desecrating the legend of the Ring of Honor championship, and that's what we kind of thought. Well, maybe Tony and I were thinking we could bring back some of the former champions and who's available, who's around. Kind of went through a bunch of different ideas and names and thoughts, and do we use guys that are in AEW? Do we do some stunt casting, kind of like we did when we brought back Juventud Guerrera and that sort of a thing? So I can't remember who we were originally thinking about doing a match with, and then Tony had the idea of Bandido. And I had heard a lot about Bandido, but I had never seen any of his matches. So I watched some of his matches, I think, on the Monday. And we had him there for the Dynamite that we did September 28th. And it was one of those ones where I didn't ever, once again, like I just said, I hadn't seen him before. We were in Philly. We thought Bandido would be good for the crowd. And I'll tell you what, once again, similar to the Eddie Kingston match, never had a match against this guy ever, and we tore the frickin' house down. One of my favorite matches of the year. I thought it was 5 stars. I don't even know what the rating was, but just going out there with this guy and not knowing anything about him, but he's such a great flyer, and he's got such power. And I said he held me up for the standing suplex, I think, for like 60 seconds, and the blood was all rushed into my head, and I could barely hold on, and he is so strong that when he finally brought me down, people started going nuts. And that's when we had him. And we did a whole bunch of crazy stuff. I took a Hurricane Rana off the apron, and I took the jumping kind of backwards moonsault power slam. I took his German suplex off the ropes. And it was just one of those matches where everything was just going so well. And I spun his mask around, and had them tap out to the walls. And man, as soon as we got back through the curtain, I said to Tony, we need to sign this guy. And that's what we did. It took a while to actually get him to commit, but man, we signed him, and I see big things in the future for Bandido. And even without a mask, he's a really good looking guy, kayfabe, without the mask on, but just his combination of his move set, his unique move set, creative move set, his high flying, and his power. I mean, he held me up for the gorilla press and dropped his hands. He was holding up with one hand. And it was just like, where has this guy been? Once again, like, I just couldn't believe how good he was, and the fact that we hadn't signed him. And so I'm not sure exactly, like I said, who the original plan was, but when Tony came up with the idea of Bandido, it was like, that is absolutely perfect. So what a great match. And once again, you're talking about, you know, this high-flying Lucha Libre style match that was different from the match I had with Claudio. It was different from the match I had with Danielson, different from the barbed wire match or cage matches or Anarchy in the Arena matches, all these different types of matches. And then that led to another kind of just a good match with Sammy versus Danielson and Garcia. That's when we kind of had the mixed tags there. That was in Washington on October 5th. It wasn't bad. It was more of a storyline match than it was an actual like a highlight match. That was another match too that we were rushed. We were on in the main event and we had to cut it short towards the end because, you know, once again, it's live TV and you got to go when you got to go. So that's kind of what we did there. And I think that was leading to more of the Danny Garcia Danielson story. And you had that. We had that before the Forbidden Door, once again, where we did the tag match with Lance Archer and Tanahashi. So you have those kind of sometimes you have to do a match, once again, just for storytelling purposes. So then we go to Toronto, October 12th, Bryan Danielson again. That was another match that was a little bit rushed, but still great. I think it was second out of the three that we had. According to Dave's match rating, it was 4 stars. I think it was 4.5 for the second one and 4 stars for the first one. So in his mind, I'm not sure how he had them. But for me, it was the Albany match was my favorite. The Toronto was second and the Chicago was third. And once again, I think I did the Lionheart in Toronto, our first time ever in Toronto. Crowd was going crazy. And that was funny, too, because I was coming out to Lionheart. So I came out to the White Zombie song, Electric Head Part 2. So the first time we're in Toronto, I was like, oh, this is kind of a mistake because I'm coming out as Lionheart. So I can't use Judas. And the crowd was like, screw it. We're just going to sing Judas on our own. So if you watch that match, the first 5 minutes of the match, I think we're brawling outside or something along those lines. Everyone's singing Judas anyways. They don't care. They wanted Judas and they got Judas for sure. So that was another great moment. We had 2 shows in Toronto. So the next night, my original idea was to do 3 matches against Ring of Honor former champions. And one was going to be Dalton Castle. There was something about him I liked. Another one was, like I said, I can't remember who the original idea was besides Bandido. And then the other one I was trying for was PCO. It didn't work. He's working for TNA Impact, and he also got hurt, had some issues, and we just couldn't work that out, which is where the She match came in, which I'll talk about later. But we did do Dalton Castle. That was in Cincinnati on October 18th. And what another great match that was. Another guy that I had never worked with, and I thought it would be more fun to do some kind of flamboyant type stuff using the boys, which was great because, you know, I had Jake and we had given him the purple hat, which has now gotten over huge as I knew it would. I like this hat. And I had the boys take his hat off, and that's when he just freaked out and started going nuts over the hat. And it was funny because when we needed some extra boys because, you know, we wanted a little bit more of a flurry towards the end, and all the guys, all the extras that week were just big guys, and the boys are kind of smaller. So little known fact, Serpentico was one of the boys that night. There you go, little fact there. But Dalton, with his charisma, his ring entrance, I knew it would get over huge. The chain of running the guys around the ringside was hilarious. Once again, another guy, he was on the first Jericho Cruise, but I'd never really seen any of his matches. So I watched a couple of his matches and saw this wicked stuff that he did and a lot of character stuff. The character stuff is so important with him. And I thought, this is so great. Let's do it, you know? So it was a lot of fun. I really, really dug that match. And he's a good worker and he knows his character. And it's different. It's unique. something, once again, when you can do something that's never been done before, that's when you can really make your mark in the business. And that's what Dalton Castle did. So another really fun match. And I really enjoyed that promo when he called me a silly goose. Is that what it was? A silly goose in Toronto. And people loved it. You know, he's insulting me in Toronto and people are cheering him for it. So another really cool match and different and something that, like, I wouldn't have been able to do normally, but when I decided to try this, desecrate any former champion from Ring of Honor, it gave us this whole collection of guys that I could work with that would be different from the norm. It also got Bandito a job, and it got Dalton Castle a job as well. So getting these guys contracts, as Booker T used to say, and of course they earned their own contracts, but it was cool to give them a spotlight to where they could really show what they could do. And both those guys did that. So nothing but respect for Bandito and nothing but respect for Dalton Castle. I enjoyed both those matches, completely different styles and completely different ways as well. Then we went to another tag match in Norfolk, Virginia, which was Danny Garcia and I versus Claudio and Yuta. And I think that was another one to kind of build Claudio up as a challenger for the Ring of Honor Championship. And as you can tell, we're getting ready to do this big match at Final Battle on December 10th. And if Claudio wins, he becomes the Ring of Honor champion. If he loses, he has to join the Jericho Appreciation Society. And maybe he can yodel. Maybe he can do some yodeling. He can be a Swiss banker or whatever the hell he's going to do. So we don't know what it's going to be. But Claudio has beaten me twice now because we're building him up as this challenger. So he did get the big win against me on that Dynamite. And that's when he did the... that's when Claudio ran wild outside, came in and basically just pinned me. He did this really great kind of, once again, the Johnny Hungy comeback where he hit this guy and nailed that guy, hit this guy, nailed that guy, jumped off the top rope, nailed me and pinned me 1-2-3, which I thought was a really good way to kind of build him. It was another great match that the 4 stars, four stars. We're just getting stars after stars after stars here. So then we go to Dynamite on November 2nd, and that's from Baltimore, and that's against Colt Cabana. And once again, we wanted to bring Colt back onto the show, reintroduce him. He had a pretty rough year as well. Former Ring of Honor champion, and always enjoyed his work, a very solid worker. And it was fun to have him back. And that's the reason why I came back solely was just because we wanted to have him on the show and reintroduce him. And he hadn't been on TV for a while. And the funny thing was, he told the story where he almost died. He bought the wrong type of socks. He bought compression socks instead of normal socks. And I guess that it was limiting his blood flow to where when he came back from the ring, he was about ready to pass out until he took his socks off. So there you go. Once again, we had people thinking at one point in the match that he was going to win. He was going to beat me and become the Ring of Honor champion. So yeah, Colt was always another guy that we had talked about doing something with as well. Colt and Dalton Castle and PCO, but PCO wasn't going to work out, so we used Bandito. I think that's what it was. Then we go, we're getting ready for Full Gear, which of course I'll talk about in a second, but to build up Full Gear, it was Jericho and Sammy versus Brian Danielson and Claudio. And once again, had the idea where what if I try and charge Claudio with the bat? He gives me the giant swing like 20 times, and then he puts me into the sharpshooter, and I try and hit him with the bat, and he takes the sharpshooter and holds it over his shoulder like Paul Bunyan with the axe as I tap out. So now Claudio has beaten me twice. As we continue to tell the story that he is kind of the guy, he's the best chance of beating me for the Ring of Honor Championship. And that's the storytelling that we did. The cool thing was the idea originally was to do me and Claudio at Full Gear. One other idea was to do me and Brian at Full Gear for the Ring of Honor title. Then Tony had the idea of doing a three-way, Brian versus Claudio versus Jericho. We still weren't quite feeling it. And then Tony, once again, he really is a smart guy. He won the Booker of the Year for a reason. He came up with the idea of putting Sammy in there and making it a four-way. Now we have to figure out how does that work storyline-wise, and we got it. It's like I was telling the story that sooner or later, the Blackpool Combat Club are going to turn on each other. They won't be able to withstand the pressure, and when they do, they're going to take each other out, and then I got my own guy to get to watch my back, and then when they take each other out, Sammy will do the right thing and let me beat him. And it was that simple, and then we have a story. and we have a little bit of intrigue going into the match. You know, obviously it's going to be Jericho and Sammy versus Claudio and Brian, but what happens if at some point it ends up being Jericho and Sammy? Or what happens if some point it ends up being Claudio and Brian? And that's what happened in that match. I really, really enjoyed that match for so many reasons, because once again, you show up, you start going over the match. What is it that we're going to do? You know, what do we have here that we can do to make this work? And that's kind of, as long as you have a story, you can make anything happen. And that crowd in Newark totally loved the story. And what a great moment when, you know, I tell Sammy, don't do anything when I hit Brian with the Death Valley Driver, with the FU. And Sammy doesn't do it. And then later, a couple seconds later, I moonsault him and Claudia at the same time. Don't have any regard for Sammy whatsoever. And now Sammy's a little pissed. And when I hit Claudio with whatever hit him with, Sammy pulls me off. And suddenly he and I get into it. And that moment where he pulled me off and I just kind of stare at him was such a great moment. And then we start going at it. And then next thing you know, it leads to Sammy turning on me. And when he hit me with that shooting star press from the top rope, everybody in the building thought for sure that Sammy was going to be the new Ring of Honor champion. It would have been a perfect place for it. And he was originally thinking about doing like a Swanton. I said, nah, Swantons never really get the reaction because you never really hit it. You know, it's always either you land on the guy where it totally crushes him or you just hit with your head. I said, do the shooting star press. It's a prettier move. You're going to land with some power. So yeah, so we shook hands and he pulled me in and he gave me the go to hell, the GTH. And then suddenly he gives me the shooting star press and it's a 1 and it's a 2.9. And everyone for sure thought he was going to be the winner. And then Brian and Claudio did a great sequence where they were fighting against each other and we thought that those guys were going to be one of the champions. And of course leads to the giant swing where I hit Claudio with the Judas and then I hit Claudio with the Judas again, full force and get the victory. So it was just a great match. And once again, just a different type of match. This four-way and four-ways, you know, they can be hard, but we really had it set up perfectly. And once again, it could be one of the best matches on the show. I mean, it seems to be, I always said I would continue to wrestle. I won't have the best match on the show every night, but I have the potential to have the best match on any given night. And some of these matches that I've told you about definitely were in that category. So I don't know what the star rating for that was. Once again, a great match. It could be 5. I mean, my star ratings are probably a little bit more biased, but my star rating also goes by how was the crowd? How do I feel when the match is done? And I felt tremendous when that match was finished. So just a great, great moment. And then 3 days later, guess what? It's Tomohiro Ishii, which might be the best match I've had all year. And we'll talk about that when we come back on Talk is Jericho. All right, so the last match that I'm going to be talking about today was Jericho versus Tomohiro Ishii. And what a war that was. I'll give you a little bit of background how that happened. So we're looking for one more Ring of Honor former champion to work with leading into Final Battle in Chicago because we kind of had a week to, I guess you'd say a free week, and I wanted to do another match with an outside guy. So we had a couple ideas. One was PCO once again, and then he wasn't available. The other idea we had was Chris Hero. But he wasn't available either. Couldn't do the gig. And same thing with Dragon Lee was another idea that Tony had. And he couldn't make it. I was like, does anybody want to wrestle me? Is there anybody? And we were thinking maybe we could use Chris Daniels. I suggested Samoa Joe or Jay Lethal, but they're in different programs. And finally, Tony, once again, the smart ideas that he has, says, what about Ishii? And I was like, that is great. Once again, hadn't really watched a lot of his matches, but I just like the concept of Ishii and Jericho, especially with our history and what I was saying on Dynamite is true. Ishii was a young boy, which in Japanese terms, they're like the rookies that hang around ringside. You see them if you watch any Japanese matches, and their job is to set up the ring, and they take care of the foreigners, and they basically are earning their stripes and paying their dues to get into the business. And Ishii was a young boy for Genshiro Tenryu in WAR when I was there in 96. And Ishii told me that he was there, got fired, and then they brought him back. So he wasn't even having any matches when I was there with him. but he was one of the rookies, you know, and he did carry my bags a couple times, you know, just help out. Not that he's carrying my bags around the city of Tokyo or anything, but, you know, helping you get into the venue and all that sort of thing. And I remember this. And when I saw him, when I went back to New Japan in 2018, he was working there. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's him. I didn't even put two and two together. So he's been to AEW a couple times, but when he was suggested to me by Tony to wrestle him, I was like, the story is right there. I mean, this is perfect. Plus, he's a hard-hitting guy. And once again, let me do something completely different that people won't expect, because the secret to having good matches is you don't try and have your opponent wrestle your match. You wrestle your opponent's match. And that's the way to do it. So, you know, I wrestle Bandido's match with him. I try and wrestle Claudio's style, try and wrestle Brian's style. Brian's a little different because he does the same thing that I do. So you're kind of just working together. But, you know, with Ishii, I said, let's just go beat the crap out of each other. And I had this idea, same idea I had with Mox. We did Quake by the Lake for commercial break, the picture in picture. You know, you want to do something exciting, but it's a small little picture, but you still got, you know, 5,000 people, 10,000 people in the arena. So you want to keep it exciting for them. So with Mox at Quake by the Lake, I said, let me put you in the Walls of Jericho and let's just hold it through the whole commercial break. And some people are like, oh, that's just prostituting your finish. My finish has been prostituted so many times. It was more of the drama. If you do something, people will pop and then they'll quiet down. But if you keep it on long enough, they'll come back again. And that's exactly what happened. So in the same spirit with Ishii, I thought, let's just, like, Brian and I and Mox and I were just like chopping each other 100 times. I think that the match I had with Brian, the second one, my chest was just a sickening grayish brown for like a week. We had chopped each other so many times and it worked. And I thought with Ishii, let's just have a chop war throughout the whole commercial break. And we're in Chicago and that's exactly what happened. We chopped each other. They were excited and then they quieted down. And then when they realized what we were doing, when we came back from break, they were just going absolutely insane. And I thought, this is so cool. And we're really not doing anything. We're just, you know, hard hitting, beating each other up, which was a blast. So we, you know, Ishii doesn't speak any English. So we had a little bit of help from Michael Nakazawa and a little bit of help from Rocky Romero. But, you know, I've been to Japan so many times. You don't really need to speak English. You just kind of go through some things. And Ishii had a couple of really great ideas and combined with a few ideas I had. But my favorite thing that he did was I give him a German. He pops up and screams. It's a strong style. He gives me a German. I pop up and scream. I give him another German, and then I'm just going to give him a moonsault, the lion salt. But I said, when I German you have to kind of end up in the middle of the ring somewhere. And I remember him saying, well, just like I'll get up and sell and fall down or something like this. What he did was he was out of position, so he got up like he was going to scream at me again and then just fell down in position for the moonsault, which I just thought was so good. Like, German, get up and ah, German, me, I get up and ah, I do it at him. He goes, ah, and then it falls down. Which I just, what a great moment. Such a little subtle thing that I just loved. And of course, he's in the walls. He sneaks out. I punch him in the face a couple times. I put him in the lion tamer and I'm just cranking it in. He gives me the finger. And when I crank it in even more, he taps out with that same finger. And it's like just little things like that. Kevin Owens and I did something like that. I believe at WrestleMania maybe. But just I really, really loved working with him. And doesn't speak English. I don't speak Japanese, but you don't have to. You know when you're having a great match. You know, and it's not like a lot of, you know, it's not like we've pushed Ishii where people know exactly who he is. It's not like it's the great Muda or Jushin Liger or something. It's like some people might know him, but other people just saw this guy and, you know, like some haters like, oh, he looks like a big potato. It's like, well, he's tough as nails and people got into that match. And it was such a great match, you know, blood on my chest, coming down on the chest, having this chop war with the visual of the blood. And I just really came out of that match so happy and so excited about that contest and about, you know, it's basically capping off the year. You know, I mean, we have the final battle match. So there's a chance for another great match there. And then we're pretty much at the end of the year. You know what I mean? So I just thought, what a great way to start the year of 2022, basically, with this awesome single match with Eddie Kingston. And then end the year of 2022 with this awesome single match with Tomohiro Ishii. Two different style matches with all these other stories that we've told. And people sometimes get on my case. Oh, we're still doing Black Bull Combat Club versus Jericho Appreciation Society. Hey, it's a good story. A A story is a story, and all the matches have been different, all the combinations have been different, and every week you've gotten quality performances from everybody involved. So what are you complaining about? What's the rush? There's no rush. You know, and there hasn't even really been that many repeat matches. I mean, Brian and I had three matches, singles, and a couple tags, and we're done. He's going off with MJF, it looks like, and I'm going off to whichever, you know, Claudio and whoever's after that. You know, Claudio and I have some matches. Well, geez, they're great matches. And we haven't touched each other for 8 years, and Brian and I had never had any matches of merit in WWE, a couple really short ones. So it's like people make me laugh sometimes when they – we want storytelling. We want great matches. And you get storytelling, great matches, and they're complaining that the stories are too long. So, once again, it just goes to show that as long as the stuff is good and as long as the matches are good, the people will be there. The ratings have been great. I mean, the Ishii match was on Thanksgiving Eve. Everyone was expecting the show to bomb. The show not only did not bomb, it beat the week before. And the Ishii match was the second highest demo of the night. Ishii versus Jericho Thanksgiving evening. So once again, as long as you tell great stories and give quality matches, you'll always get ratings and always have people that are enjoying it. So I appreciate all of you for enjoying the matches this year, whether you thought it was a 5-star match or a 4-star match or whatever. Who cares about the stars? Did you like it? That's all that matters. Did it entertain you? That's all that matters. And I think for me, once again, with all these matches I've named, and you know, there were years when I was working 200 matches a year, and this year I worked, as of right now, 26 matches, but all of them meant something. They're all quality matches with a meaning behind them. And no, you know, Sunday afternoon in Poughkeepsie, you know, nothing against the fine people of Poughkeepsie, but every match was on TV, a main event, a pay-per-view main event, a pay-per-view cornerstone. So it was just a great year for me. And will I have a better year than this? Well, you always try. But I'll tell you what, at 51, if this ends up being one of the best years of my career overall, I can't, well, I'm 52 now. I can't even believe it, but I don't feel 52. I feel 32 with the experience of 52. And like I said, as long as I can continue having matches that could possibly be the best of the night, then I'll continue to do what I'm doing. So thanks to all you guys, and I hope you had a great 2022. I know we still got a few weeks left, but essentially I wanted to do this show. I had some time here in Melbourne, and like I said, I've got probably one match left or maybe two matches left. But other than that, this year is a wrap for me. And like I said, I've enjoyed every minute of it. And I think after the pulmonary embolism, I learned never take anything for granted and always appreciate where you are and what you're doing. And it made me love wrestling more than ever. And, you know, people say, how long are you going to keep going? I don't know. I could stop, you know, next week. I could stop a year from now. Sting is still having banger matches at 63. So, you know, if you think I'm having a great year, look at his year. I bet you if Sting had a podcast where he just wanted to talk about himself for an hour, he's far too humble to do that. He could probably have a show with as many highlights as I did, because every match I see of him, he always does something great, and the matches are always good too. So it just goes to show it's not age. It's the passion that you have and the fire that you have and the desire. So thank you for being there for this wonderful year. And I look forward to 2023 and continuing this streak. And we appreciate you, and we thank you, and I thank you for joining me on this journey. Have a great Christmas and a great holiday season.